The story starts, I got a TI-83 for my calculus class in high school. This was actually my first programmable electronic device that was really my own. Once I got over the fact that you could, you know, graph equations that look like boobies, I was really intrigued by its programming abilities. And so, in the context of my calculus class, I realized I could write code that implements various algorithms that could then programmatically solve calculus equations. There's one problem, though, and this was that my math teacher would check our calculators during any exam and see what programs were on there. What I had to do is I had to basically figure out a way to create a program that would able to solve some of these calc equations without, you know, getting caught.
Hello, cyber listeners. This is Lorenzo Franceschi Bicchierai, and today we have another special episode of My First Hack. I'm speaking with Patrick Worrell, who worked for the NSA, but is now well known for finding vulnerabilities and bugs in Apple's operating system, macOS. Patrick will tell us about how he hacked into his fancy calculator in high school and how he even hid a backdoor in it. So, hi Patrick, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm great, thanks for having me on. Stoked to talk nerdy with you today.
Yeah, you're actually our second guest, and both our first two guests are from former Spooks. So yeah,
former.
We had a. Well, yeah, I don't know, but I don't want to know about that. Don't blow your cover here. But yeah, we had Emily Crows a few weeks ago, and yeah, I'm excited to have you. I name dropped you at some point because we were talking about how she went from being a student to working at the NSA and stuff, and how people can get into cybersecurity. And her main advice was like, yeah, just be curious about computers. And I said, yeah, you know, like if people like Patrick, it really seems like they're nerds that just love what they're doing. And she's like, yeah, yeah, I agree. So anyway, awesome. I guess we had to have you as a second guest. So yeah, we're going to talk about your first hack. You know, we're going to go back in time, although you're pretty young. So that's probably like, a couple of years ago. I don't know.
Pretty much yesterday.
You're a newbie. So yeah, tell us, what was your first hack?
So it's kind of an interesting story. And I like that you mentioned kind of the curiosity thing, because just a little backstory, I like to think about what motivates hackers. And here we're talking about, you know, true hackers, not necessarily cyber criminals per se. And I really think it's kind of this fundamental curiosity of really wanting to know how something really works. I do think then there's also kind of some interest in, you know, beating the system, sticking it to the man. So my first hack actually has elements of both of this. There's definitely some curiosity and, you know, wanting to beat the system, sticking it to the man who I always have to laugh. Because in my case, this was my lovely calculus teacher. So the story starts, I got a TI-83 for my calculus class in high school. And this was actually my first programmable electronic device that was really my own. I didn't really grow up with computers, televisions, et cetera, et cetera. So I was really fond of this device. I was really fascinated. And, you know, once I got over the fact that you could, you know, graph equations that look like boobies, you know, come on, high school boys, this is what we do. I was really,
yeah, fair.
I was really intrigued by, captivated by its programming abilities. I mean, the fact that you could extend a device's capabilities and write code to allow it to do all sorts of neat things was just really intriguing to me. I was really curious. Now, I will caveat, I didn't know how to code, so this was a way for me also to teach myself how to program, right? And so in the context of my calculus class, I realized I could write code that implements various algorithms that could then programmatically solve calculus equations. Hmm. And you know, I thought, hey, this would be a great way to learn how to code, how to program, which was something that I really wanted to kind of learn. And also, sure, a way to kind of ace my calculus class. There's one problem, though, and this was that my math teacher would check our calculators during any exam and see what programs were on there. He would look at what was installed, run some of them, you know, because he obviously understood the capabilities, you know, of these calculators. And so what I had to do is I had to basically figure out a way to create a program that would able to solve some of these calc equations without, you know, getting caught. So my hack was to create a very benign looking program that would ask you, you know, hey, something like, give me a decimal place and I will give you the digit of pi. Or given a calendar date, it would give you the day of the week. So you could say, what day is, you know, 4/20/2000? And it would say Thursday. Mm-hmm. However, if you put in a special value at the menu prompt, it would take you to kind of like a secret menu that then had the ability to solve these calc equations. So what I did was I basically wrote equations and implemented these programmatically to, for example, use these different methods to approximate integrals during an exam. So the hack was then basically this program that had, you know, a backdoor. And so, you know, never got caught, definitely aced my calculus class. But really, looking at it in retrospect, incidentally, coding up these algorithms for these calculus equations gave me an incredible depth of understanding of them, right? When you're writing or implementing some code that, you know, is solving equations, you're going to gain a really in-depth understanding of those equations, and then you're going to test your code. And so, end result, I definitely understood these calculus equations better than any of my classmates. And so that to me is kind of ties back to the goals we mentioned of True Hacker. It's really a curiosity and a learning thing. And so if I look back again, this first hack was in a way very pivotal. Definitely helped me pass my classes, which, you know, helped me get into college. And I have no problem talking about this now because I feel like the statute of limitations have expired. But it also really piqued my interest in backdoors, code obfuscation, Trojans. And that is actually my career today, is analyzing such code and how to detect them and protect that. So, you know, I'm very comfortable talking about this, you know, this first hack. It's obviously wasn't anything illegal because I really came out of it learning a lot, understanding how to program, remembering these calculus equations even today, which is definitely no small feat. And I really feel it really helped kick off my career. So that's kind of a nutshell, my first hack, my first foray into you know, programming backdoors, trying to beat the system, et cetera, et cetera.
That's a really fun story. I never had like such a sophisticated calculator, but I remember in my first trip to the US, I went to New York with my parents and I bought like one of those Casio, so like mini computers.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
Not even a tablet, you know, like it had like a contact. He had like some rudimentary video game. I don't remember. I think it was poker actually. Yeah, he had like a poker video game that I used a lot in high school when I was bored, but you couldn't really program it as far as I know. But yeah, it's cool to think about these small computers that were already programmable and, you know, gave kids like you an opportunity to code. I guess my first question here is, you know, a lot of our listeners will probably know you from, you know, your Twitter, your talks, but hopefully also for the tools that you've been making and sharing for free, you know, tools for Mac, security for Mac. So I'm curious, like, did you share this secret with any of your classmates, this secret, you know, calculus backdoor program?
What should I admit to? You know, after a while, it became common knowledge that, you know, Patrick would write programs that would help share that. So I always like to freely share my information, you know, kind of how I do that. But at the same time, you know, I always kind of held on to this belief that, you know, it's good to kind of give other people the tools, the technologies and the know-how versus just maybe handing them off, you know, because really the goal for me was, you know, yeah, I wanted to do well on my exams, but it was also really just this curiosity. So I kind of always had at least some principle in mind that, you know, this should be a learning opportunity even for other classmates if they so chose.
Mm-hmm. So be honest, how much did your grade change before and after the backdoor
program? Well, I am fortunate enough to do pretty well academically. So I had A's before and A's afterwards. So in retrospect,
so you just made it a little easier for yourself.
Yeah, and it was really just the way, I think, to double check, because you always have to show all your work anyways. Mm-hmm. And like I said, once I actually sat down, and I remember I coded this up during my spring break, which gives you an idea of how cool a high school kid I was, right? You know, all my friends were like flying to, you know, Cancun or Florida, at least. Kind of came from a very wealthy high school. I, you know, had $0 as a high school kid. So I was like, well, I'm going to stay home and learn how to implement calculus equations in TI Basic.
Well, jokes on them, because now you live in Hawaii and you fly all over the world. Well, except this year with COVID, but usually you fly to all of these conferences. So yeah, I think you came out winning this game.
Yeah, no, I feel very fortunate in that regards, definitely.
So how was, like, how long did it take you to figure out, well, that first of all, you could do that on the calculator, and also, you know, to write the whole code, you know, the whole program, and figure out that you could put a backdoor so that it would be, you know, non-detectable to a scan, I guess, the teacher's scan.
Yeah, so, you know, understanding the capabilities of the calculator was pretty clear. You know, there was kind of games you could download, and there was other programs that would do other computations. So for me, it was just then this intriguing curiosity, like, how can I figure out how to do that? You know, I went to high school, you know, graduated, I believe it was 2001, definitely dating myself a little here, but this is really when kind of computers and technology was really starting to blossom. So I knew I really wanted to get into programming. Programming was interesting because it's one of those things that has this kind of strange learning curve, or at least it did for me, and talking to others anecdotally, it seems to be similar, where, you know, it's this almost like different mindset. So at the beginning, it's not something that just comes naturally. You kind of struggle with it. And then kind of there's this moment where it just clicks. And from then on, it's like, you know, you can pick up new programming languages and it almost becomes second nature. So I mentioned this because it definitely took me a while because, you know, kind of figuring out the syntax of the programming language. And then, you know, if you use the wrong keyword, or, you know, in some programming languages, you use the wrong indentation, or you forget a semicolon, like, there's going to be a rather obtuse compiler error, which takes a while to figure out. So it's this very kind of like trial and error process at the beginning. So it, you know, definitely took me, I would say, you know, days, if not weeks, to code up even some of the basic calculus equations, because one, I was, you know, learning my first programming language. So all the concepts of, you know, what a variable is, and, you know, control flow, and, you know, Boolean expressions. Those are all kind of new concepts. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, coding up algorithms to solve calculus equations in, you know, TI Basic is probably not the easiest way to start as well. So, but it took me a while, and it's, even today, I'm not like a super fast programmer. You know, it's something I would never win like a speed competition in that capacity. Yeah, I really enjoy it. It's a great kind of way to learn, and you really gain a fundamental understanding of whatever you're implementing this in this specific case, you know, calculus equations for approximating integrals.
Yeah, I'm not a coder, but everyone says that, like, by learning code, you really understand how machines work, how computers work, and you sort of, like, change the way you look at them. And I'm actually curious, like, was there, at the time, was there any resource to learn TI Basic online, or you basically started from scratch and just taught yourself by trial and error?
I remember I'd go to the library and I would check out, there were some programming books. I remember there was assembly language programming books. And, you know, I knew that assembly language was kind of the lowest level in terms of closest to the metal, closest to the, you know, the CPU. And so you could do, it was in a way the most powerful programming language. And so I kind of started there, and those books were just so hard to digest. I mean, you're trying to understand like hex, you know, and binary code, and, you know, it's just like, it just puts your brain into a loop. But there were
some, when you're a teen also.
I know, I was like, I should be out like talking to girls or something. But, instead of like in the library reading, you know, assembly killing books. Again, definitely the coolest high school kid. But yeah, there were some kind of online resources and tutorials. Definitely not as much as today, but there were some. And that's a really a thing I've noticed too with hackers or, you know, even just computer programmers, those that really kind of live and breathe their career is, you know, this love of learning, you know. And for example, my high school at the time had no programming classes. The only computer class we had, and I say that in quotes, was like learning how to type. And so if you were interested in programming or wanted to learn more about computers, the onus was on you to go out and take that initiative. And I've seen this very commonly with people who excel, especially in the cybersecurity field, you know, really some of the top hackers. And there's a quote at the beginning of the Shellcoder's Handbook, which is this kind of seminal book that was published in, I believe, 2001 or 2003, 2004, about exploits and hacking. And there's a quote in it, and the general idea is, or the quote says, you know, this is dedicated to those that understand hacking is not a 9-to-5 job. It's really a mentality. It's a way of life. And it really goes back to this curiosity and just this fascination of learning and one of figuring out how things do. Not generally for personal gain. I mean, you know, being able to, you know, pop a shell is cool, or, you know, trick your friends into something. Like, you know, those are all neat kind of side effects. But I really found people who have this fundamental and crave this curiosity really, you know, are the ones who ultimately, in my opinion, kind of really thrive in the hacker scene.
Yeah, it's a very vocational job. I think journalism is a little bit, or writing is a little bit like that too. If you don't enjoy doing it, you're not going to be good at it.
And so it's important to let people know that, because cybersecurity hacking, you know, can be a very lucrative career with a lot of opportunities to work remotely and travel. So in some ways, it's definitely the dream job. But if it's not something you fundamentally enjoy, it's going to be like pulling teeth. And I imagine, like you said, journalism, something similar, where it's a lot of perks. But if you don't enjoy writing, it's going to be the worst.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
So do you remember any specific time you used it that was, you know, remarkable? Maybe because, like, I don't know, you hadn't studied enough for that test and it really helped you, or maybe the teacher was very close to catching it and you didn't.
And that's the interesting thing, is I really don't have any specific memories of, you know, even using it in an exam per se, maybe to check some answers or something. But again, I really felt so prepared after coding this up. I felt like I had such a, you know, complete understanding of these algorithms, of these calculus equations, that, you know, using it was almost secondary, right? It was more about, and this is very cliche, it was more about the journey versus the destination. So, you know, in that way, it was almost like not that exciting once it was done and all coded up and working. It's like, yeah, I could like double check my, answers on the exam or my homework assignments I could do quicker. But, you know, I had spent a week coding this up. So really, from like a return on investment time-wise point of view, at least in the short term, it really wasn't very efficient.
Yeah, so I'm sure that a lot of our listeners are wondering, even those that know you and know your a little bit of your career, like, how did you go from that? You know, how did you go from teaching yourself TI basic and having a basic understanding of backdoors and malware, I guess? How did you go from that to, you know, working at NSA and then becoming one of the most well-known, you know, cybersecurity speakers and experts? Like, how did that happen? And what would you tell, you know, young wannabe hackers?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I feel very fortunate where I am now. And so I feel like the path I took might be an illustrative example of one way that, you know, someone could potentially kind of get to this end goal. I went off to school. I chose the University of Hawaii. I mentioned in high school, you know, I was definitely, I actually lived by myself, and I was in this tiny apartment that didn't have heat. And so I'd wake up every morning, and this was in Connecticut, and it would just be so cold. And so I'd have to like jump in my car, which also didn't have heat, and like beeline it to school, and the school had heat. So that was like, hooray, this is good. And so, when we were applying for colleges, a lot of my friends were going off to like Yale, these Ivy League East Coast schools. And I was like, I just want to go somewhere warm. Like, and this is a true story. So I said, you know, there's colleges in Florida, there's colleges in California. And I was like, wait a minute, Hawaii. And I had never been to Hawaii. I didn't know anything about Hawaii, but you know, I applied, and, you know, the University of Hawaii, it's pretty easy to get into. Let's say it's not world renowned for its academics. So I kind of hopped on a plane, moved out to Hawaii, and I knew I wanted to learn more about computers. And so I enrolled in their computer science program. But the interesting thing was, you know, it was a very standard, typical computer science program. So we learned programming languages, data structures, software engineering, took some crypto courses, but there was really no cybersecurity courses. And so again, it was really up to me and kind of my passion to, you know, learn outside of class. So I read a lot of the old school like virus online tutorials, you know, read more assembly language. And so that was kind of interesting because at that time, basically no other university was, you know, teaching these cybersecurity classes. So a lot of the hackers at that time, again, were kind of had to basically self-learn, which again, I think is a hallmark of a successful hacker or cybersecurity expert. So in a way, I still believe that where you go to college doesn't matter as much as your just desire and motivation and your curiosity. I mean, sure, if you're able to go to MIT or Stanford and study computers there, like by all means, don't turn that down. But, you know, in our career as a cybersecurity expert, you know, your college almost doesn't matter. So that's one thing I really like to tell people, you know, like go to the community college, go to the cheap in-state school, you know, it's really more about what you learn outside. So I was lucky enough then to, I did a short internship at NASA where I got to work on some software for the space shuttles. Really neat. But again, I was like, you know, I want to do computer viruses and hacking and malware. So, you know, the NSA was also hiring at the time, and I did again an internship with them and then took a full-time job. And I remember during my interview there, they asked me if I had reverse engineered any games or, you know, cracked any software. And I'm like, is this a trick question? Because like, this is essentially the US government asking me if I've like, you know, done anything illegal. And I, you know, of course I had, or, you know, because reverse engineering protection schemes, writing key gens is really kind of a great way to cut your teeth in the reverse engineering scene. And, you know, so I was honest. I was like, see NSA, they're gonna know if I'm lying anyways. So
they probably already know, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, you know, I was like, if I create a key gen, I don't release the code, but, you know, I use it as an opportunity to reverse engineer. And, you know, that's really what they were looking for, is individuals who had some experience reverse engineering, maybe breaking copyright schemes, doing some kind of, you know, hacking type stuff in that capacity. So that's really how I then got dialed into the NSA. I did some stints. I did a tour in a crypto office. I did another tour in an office called the Malicious Code Analysis Office, which is really interesting. I was able to reverse engineer and analyze malware and computer viruses used in intrusions against DoD systems. So I saw some really neat, wow, custom high-end malware, and able to reverse engineer, yeah, and learn. I then transitioned to the offensive side, where I developed cyber capabilities. I remember, again, I'm still kind of this college kid doing this internship, and I feel like I can say this now. But basically, they gave me a network scan of a network that they were interested in, and they said, here are the services and here's the ports, like, you know, find a way in. So I reverse engineered some of the protocols, some of the software that was running on the system, found a nice vulnerability, and, you know, the rest is history.
Man, this was when you were just an intern, right?
Yeah. So it was an amazing opportunity that, like, you know, it's kind of like trial by fire. I mean, you had mentors and people helping you, but the fact that immediately you were given some really like cool projects. So I really like to talk a lot about the NSA and in the sense of it being a really amazing career path, because it's one of the few places in the world where you can get this incredible offensive cybersecurity experience, which I think translates incredibly well into the defensive side as well. I always argue that it's very difficult to, for example, build defensive tools or understand how to defend a network if you haven't been on the other side. And the NSA is one of those places where you get an opportunity to learn and actually, you know, in a hands-on manner, create offensive capabilities, understand how an advanced nation state operates, which I think is invaluable for, as I said, kind of if you end up then on the defensive side, kind of with that, armed with that understanding.
And yeah, well, since we're talking about this, I guess I did have one like last very easy question for you, kind of a softball. So how many of your exploits and tools were dumped by the shadow brokers?
I'm not going to answer that directly, but I will caveat that occasionally I see research that come out and I'm always like, huh, that looks really familiar. And it's interesting because sometimes it's, you know, 10 plus years down the road. There's part of me that recognizes that. So
yeah, again, this goes back to like cutting edge work that you can only really do for a government institution. And I just thought of another question. Like, does it make it hard to get another job? You know, the fact that you cannot, you know, if someone is recruiting you or like you're going through interviews, you cannot really tell them what you were doing. Like, does it make it hard? Or I guess the stamp of approval of the NSA is more important than showing what you were doing there.
Fair. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a really good question because you really can't talk to the specifics or even the successes you had. And so I think nowadays, though, the NSA is really understood as this really good, I would say, training ground where people, as we talked about, can get invaluable experience. So as you noted, I feel like the stamp of approval really is incredible. So again, when I talk to, you know, college kids or we talk about kind of career paths, again, that's a huge benefit. You can go work at the NSA, you can learn a lot, hands-on experience. And then if you want to transition to something a little more public or, you know, something that you can work remotely from, right? There's a lot of pros to hopping to the private sector. You know, basically anybody is going to hire you. You know, Google, the tech companies. I'm sure the Russians would be interested. not saying you should go that route, but
a little bit more risky. I don't know if that's,
you know, ransomware gangs might be knocking on your door. But, you know, all joking aside, it really opens up the door for basically any job in the cybersecurity field. And I think even if you can't talk about the specifics, you can illustrate your technical capabilities. So, you know, I think it's almost the opposite. Instead of, especially now with being it for preventing you from getting hired, it's really just the opposite. And it's just this incredible foundational that really gives you unparalleled, I would say, job security and career opportunities when you move into the private sector.
Yeah, and I have to note that not everyone is as good as you are and not disclosing secrets, because especially a few years ago, there were like so many former NSA or DoD people on LinkedIn that just dropped, you know, classified programs names in their bios. And those were really the golden days. I think Chris Segoyan, he's like, his favorite pastime was going on LinkedIn and just finding top secret names and then FOIAing that. But I think now it's way less common. A lot of people are smarter than that. So,
yeah, that was a little disconcerting. And I was like, because at the NSA, they really, you know, let you know, like, hey, you know, you just can't chat about this stuff. And, you know, you agree to that. And I think it's part of the understanding, too, if you believe in the mission and what NSA is doing, by revealing that information, there could be some, you know, national security implications. So it was a little tough for me when I saw people kind of go out and disclose that.
Yeah, you don't want to end up in prison or, you know, in exile in Russia. You
know? True. And also just, I would say, undermining like the great work that the NSA does. I mean, it, you know, there's obviously that's an opinionated topic, but I feel like if you go work there and see what they're doing, I mean, they are really striving to, you know, make sure, you know, the U.S. we're safe and sound and keeping an eye on, you know, terrorist operations and what foreign adversaries who, you know, maybe don't wish the best for us are doing. So, There's also, I think, some impact that people might not always take into consideration. So at least that's my take on the matter.
Well, thank you so much. This was really fun as usual. Always a pleasure talking to you. And yeah, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Lorenzo.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.